Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today is a little combination of me sharing some personal anecdotes, some personal stories, reflections, information about my own process and my own recovery, and then more specifically talking about the later stages of recovery where you are really back in life and really trying to do more, in this case specifically physically, and looking to support your body as you take on maybe bigger physical challenges or start to expand your capacity more and more. And just to put everything into a little bit of context, the inspiration for this episode today is that I really recently shared on social media that I did a very long hike, the longest hike that I have done since I was ill, which was 21 kilometers. It took about 6 hours. And I shared this and I celebrated this on my Instagram stories. And then, you know, obviously people were celebratory and supportive for me, which was wonderful. But people also asked me to share a little bit about what the recovery process after something like that looks like, given where I am at with my health and my own healing journey. And a lot of people expressed interest in just understanding more about how to prepare your body for bigger expansions, how to support your body to recover after bigger expansions, and maybe a little bit more of a dialogue around these end stages of recovery where we actually can do significant physical things, but we still have to be careful and we still have to give the body the support that it needs. So, you know, if you're bedbound at this moment in time, you know, this might not necessarily be the episode that's going to give you what you need for where you are in that stage. And don't worry, because I have other episodes on that. But it might still be nice for you to listen today, just, you know, for inspiration or for thinking about the future. But this episode specifically is for those who are in a good enough place and looking to expand more physically. I'll just tell a little story about the hike itself, so, because I think it's important to share some of the details. A couple of years ago now, I started working with a client. Her name is Henrietta. I think you will find her testimonial on my website. We started working together in a professional capacity. She did my 6-month support plan, which she then extended for a further 6 months, just doing somatic work only with me for another 6 months. And that all went very, very well, got her to a really good place where she could start walking again. And as we worked together, it was quite clear that we shared a lot of common loves and passions. She's also a lover of the outdoors. She's a lover of hiking and being outside, also a lover of cats and good food. And we just had very similar personality traits. And very often at the end of our somatic sessions, we might have like 10 minutes left where the somatic work felt complete for the day. And then she would often ask me questions about myself, which can feel very uncomfortable to me. I think I've shared in a previous episode, I'm very good at centering and hiding behind professionalism. But when someone starts to ask more sort of personal questions, that can feel a little bit vulnerable and a little bit exposing. And I guess also when you are working with clients, to a degree, you do want to not center yourself. You take that step back. You're a bit more of a blank canvas because you want to hold space for the client's experience. So anyway, it seemed to be supportive for Henrietta that I shared a little bit more about myself. And I think I do find that with clients generally is that it's such a lonely experience to go through, that just being able to talk with someone who's experienced something similar is often a novelty. And we're often quite isolated as well in the experience, and just being able to talk to people who get it, who understand, can feel really, really nourishing. So that's definitely part of the process here. But after a certain amount of time, Henrietta basically said, I don't want to work with you anymore because I want to be your friend, which was very, I guess, courageous. And she's even admitted to the fact that that was a really big deal to sort of say something like that. And there was obviously a connection there, and we stopped working together about a year ago. And then earlier this year, she came to visit me in my home in southwest coast of England, and I guess we've been friends ever since. But she's now visited 3 times. This is the 3rd time she's visited, and each time we've gone on, we've done a little hike together, and each time those hikes have got progressively longer and progressively longer. And this most recent time she came, the weather was like, I wasn't sure what the weather was doing. My mom has been here at the moment, and it was also the birthday of my stepdad, who passed away a year ago. So it was the first birthday of his since he passed away. And I needed to also be there for my mom. So the whole kind of weekend was up in the air, and I wasn't quite sure what we were going to do. And then on a whim, I found this hike, and I said, how do you feel about hiking 21 kilometers? Would that be too much for you? And she was like, no, I'm game. So we had a very important conversation about hiking snacks, and the excitement started to build. And then she came down for the weekend, and then on the Sunday we did this hike. We were so lucky. It was overcast, so not too hot, very little wind, so just beautiful, calm seas, amazing views. And we set off on this hike, which took us about 6 hours, including a little stop for lunch. So for me, that was a really big achievement. That's the furthest I've hiked since I've been ill. I've done a lot of walking, a lot of hiking previously prior to becoming unwell, but this is the first sort of longer distance that I've covered since my illness. And it was also the same for Henrietta. She is obviously a little bit more behind me in her own personal journey. She hasn't had as much time to build up her physical capacity and her physical fitness yet. But she also managed it really, really well. So I'm going to share a bit about what the recovery afterwards looked like. So in terms of the actual day, we're both early risers. So we were both up by 5:30, had a tea, had a little chat, made a really good breakfast, packed up all our things. And I think we were on the road by 7:00. It was our drive to get to our start destination, and then we did a circular route. Then once we had finished, we also just, had a little bit of time to have a little snack, and then drove home, which was another hour. So we were out of the house maybe 8 or 9 hours for the whole day. And obviously, in addition to doing the hike, I did 2 hours of driving as well. And I don't really like driving. So that's another thing that was an extra load for the day. So in terms of like immediately after, I think we got back at about 3:00-ish, 3:30. Henrietta just went to go lie down and have a little bit of a nap. She does the new Calm vagus nerve stimulator. So she went to go lie down and do that. And I just had a green tea. I sat out on the balcony in the sunshine. I think I uploaded some pictures to Instagram, just did some pottering around, but generally felt pretty good. And we had a nice, healthy dinner, and we went to bed early, took lots of supplements for sleep support, and I slept really well. And so then the next morning, I woke up, and there was definitely like a feeling like my body's done something, but we're still able to go down to the beach, which is like a 10-minute walk from where I live. I did a little short swim, so just like a 5-minute swim in the cold water just to get some blood flow, just to get things moving. And I think the cold water was really helpful. And then we went back home again and had some breakfast and just relaxed until I had to drop her off at the station. Then I came home, and because she had just left, I was doing laundry and cleaning the house and sort of just putting everything in its place, because that's what makes my nervous system feel well and grounded. And then in an ideal world, I think I would have probably rested just at home, just done something really low key for the rest of the afternoon. But I had another friend who wanted to meet up. And sometimes this particular friend's quite difficult for us to find compatible schedules. So because it was Bank Holiday Monday, we were both free. And we ended up walking down to the beach and getting a coffee and getting a brownie and sitting in the sun and chatting and then walking home. So it was quite like an on afternoon, just with the walk, the sunshine, you know, lots of sort of like cognitive mental stimulation with the chatting, and then coming home again. But I felt pretty good. I can't say from a cognitive perspective, if I had to work that day, I don't know how sharp my brain would have been, but I was definitely sort of felt pretty normal going about my social activities and activities of daily living and household chores. So that was the first sort of 24 hours post hike. And then the next 48 hours, I had to go back to work. So I woke up, I was still kind of feeling quite tired in my body. I again just went down to the beach, did a short swim, came home, and I had quite a busy morning. I was speaking with a client in Australia, so we had an 8:30 start. And given that it had been the bank holiday weekend, I was at my desk by 7:30 to start catching up on all the emails. And then I had three clients pretty much back to back up until lunchtime. So it was quite a full-on morning, early start, full-on morning. But then I did take a couple of hours break over lunchtime and I had a nap, which was wonderful. And I am a bit of a napper. So it's not that I always necessarily feel like I need a nap, but often I might just go lie down for like 20 minutes, half an hour, and I might just have a 10 or 20 minute power nap, depending on how much time I've got. And I really find that so supportive for my brain and my cognition. Sometimes a 10 minute nap just feels like it completely resets my brain for the afternoon. So I know that that's one of my strategies, which really helps. Then I did some admin and administrative work, and I had another client later in the afternoon, and then I've wrapped everything up, I think probably about 5:30 or so that day, and then I went for another little walk. So that day it was quite noticeable that there was more cognitive fatigue. I would probably say, I don't know how it would have been if I could have or if I had chosen to rest more the day before instead of meeting my friend in the afternoon. But it is what it is. And I was aware of some cognitive fatigue, but it wasn't that I had to do anything outside of my regular routine. I didn't feel like it was influencing my ability to work in any way. Then that night, by the time I was going to bed, I thought, maybe tomorrow morning I'll be ready to do something a little bit more. But I actually had a really bad night's sleep, just I think due to some emotional processing, some other things going on. And I woke up actually, interestingly, less cognitively fatigued, but my body just felt really tired when I woke up that morning. So again, I just did a short swim, I had a little walk, and then I went to work. And actually, once I started getting into work, I felt more like myself, I think because my cognition was much better than the day before. And then afternoon, I ended up I had chosen to take my mom to the cinema. And we went to Pizza Express afterwards, and I just ate a salad. That's a little bit more out of routine for me to do something like that in the middle of the week. So that was the third day afterwards. And then by the next day, I really felt like back to my normal self. I felt like I could do some physical activity. So I actually went down to the beach, I did a longer swim, which was only 20 minutes, but the sea is still quite cold this time of year. So a 20-minute swim is almost like a 40-minute swim, just because you're battling the stress of the exercise and battling the stress of the cold. I did a full work day. And then today, which is the fifth day after the hike, this morning I was at the gym. And obviously now I'm here talking to you. So I wanted to kind of like spell that out in detail. And I hope it wasn't too tedious for you to listen to. But I think what I really wanted to paint the picture as is, when you go and do something really big, it is normal to feel a little bit more tired for a few days afterwards. And you really do want to allow space in your life for that. I think a couple of weekends ago, we just had the London Marathon. I'm sure most of the people who ran the London Marathon, maybe apart from the tip-top athletes, all felt pretty tired for a few days after running the marathon, and maybe are planning to even have a couple of weeks of really, really reduced output and ease back into things slowly. So the first thing here to highlight is when you do something big, which is a bit more of a stretch, a bit more of something which is significantly more than what you would normally do, it would be normal to feel more tired for several days afterwards. There's obviously a difference between noticing that you're a bit more tired, that you need a little bit more self-care, that you need a bit more space, that you need and you need a little bit more rest versus loss of quality of life. So not like having to go back to bed for an afternoon or having to take the afternoon off work. But even then, that's actually even nothing to be ashamed of. If you just need to take an afternoon off work, get a little bit more rest, and then you bounce back, I would still call that a win. Just what we really are wanting to avoid is, you know, a debilitating loss of capacity that lingers not just for a few days, but into weeks. That would probably suggest an overextension, that whatever was done was too much. And, you know, as the days and the weeks go on, you can't get back into your regular routines. But if you just need to drop back on your life load for a few days and then you gradually ease back in, I would say that that is a normal human response, and that's very well balanced and very well measured. So that's kind of like where I'm at physically. Also, just to say, from a data perspective, I have a Garmin watch, so I was tracking some of the stats while I was doing all of this. And what was really interesting, because Henrietta also has a Garmin watch, we potentially have the same one, is that overnight, after the night after the hike, you know, my resting heart rate was absolutely normal. My stress score was really low. Garmin has this feature which is called a body battery. So you, when your stress is low, your body battery recharges. So usually the most amount of recharging happens overnight because that's when we have less stress. So my body battery recharged really nicely overnight. My stress score was low. My heart rate was good. My body recovered really well based on the exertion we did that day. Henrietta's, on the other hand, showed a lot more stress throughout the night. So her heart rate was a little bit more elevated. She would have had a lower heart rate variability, and therefore her body battery didn't really recharge as well. And she had more nighttime stress. And she also didn't really sleep very well. I slept very well, whereas she struggled a little bit with her sleep. And I think that that's a testament to the fact that she's had less time to condition her body. She's only really got back into her walking and hiking in the past year, where I've been walking longer distances probably for the past 5 years. So I've just had a lot more time to condition my body. But whereas, you know, I still needed that extra rest day 3 days afterwards, she messaged me and she was doing kettlebells. So her recovery, you know, within a few days was back to where she wanted it to be. And we talked a little bit about it, and she said, yes, you know, like I'm back doing kettlebells, but, you know, I haven't had to sit with clients and at a desk and do lots of cognitive work 8 hours a day for the past few days. So, you know, with different life loads, recovery can look different after the event. Her total cognitive life load is a lot lower than mine at the moment. And then that frees up more energy for her physical recovery, whereas I'm trying to navigate running a business and looking after my mom, and then my physical recovery as well. So there's just more in life for me right now that takes up energy. So that kind of paints a little bit of the picture of everything going on. And so where I wanted to go to next with this is to talk about, if you are in the stage of recovery where you do have a good enough amount of physical capacity, but there's this desire perhaps to expand, there's a desire perhaps to do a little bit more or to challenge yourself in different ways, how do you first of all know if you're ready for it? And then secondly, how do you plan and prepare your body to take on some sort of physical challenge in a way that will allow you to recover and allow you to positively adapt to that challenge so that it doesn't become something that exhausts you, but it potentially becomes something that can help you grow your capacity, grow your fitness, and lead to bigger things that you might want to take on in the future. So The first thing I would say is that nothing can replace giving yourself the time to train appropriately for the things that you want to do. And what I mean by this is it's all very well to, you know, pick a goal, pick something that you want to work towards. But the first question we have to ask is this appropriate for me right now? And if it's not appropriate for you right now, then what are the stepping stones or the training steps that would help this to become more appropriate for me in the future? Now, even people who run marathons, they don't just decide one day that they're going to run a marathon and they do it. They take small, titrated steps, maybe starting with a 5K, then a 10K, then a 12K, then a 15K, then a half marathon, and they train, they eat, they rest, they recover, they take weeks, they take months, and eventually, little by little, they get themselves to the point where they could complete a marathon. And it should be no different in fatigue recovery. In terms of this specific thing that, you know, that I did, when we're looking at like a long hike is going to involve time on your feet, time outside in the elements. It's going to involve like some uphills, some downhills, some flat terrain. These are things we need to prepare our body for. If you're just walking 10,000 steps a day, but there's no hills, and you do it inside on a treadmill, let's just use that as an example, that's a very, very different experience to doing 10,000 steps a day, which is outside with some hills, maybe the sun is shining, maybe the wind is blowing, maybe you're a little bit cold. You know, all of these environmental elements are things that our nervous system is going to have to buffer. So we want to think about, you know, what is the challenge and have we got enough exposure to things that look like the challenge so that when we do actually experience it, our nervous system is a little bit more conditioned to these elements. So if you are walking 10,000 steps a day, but it's indoors on a treadmill, the first thing might just be to walk outside 10,000 steps a day and then outside with some hills and then maybe outside in cold weather, outside in hot weather, outside in windy weather, sometimes walking into the wind. All of these different things are things that when your system is more sensitive to, then we need to kind of give the nervous system a heads up. This is what it feels like to walk in the cold. This is what it feels like to walk in the heat. This is what it feels like to be outside for any sort of stretch of time. So we're just trying to think of all the different variables and prepare the body for that. And so if I give an example about what I do, I walk outside every single day. My average step count, according to my Garmin, is like 12,500 steps a day. Granted, that's more some days, less other days. I do hills. Unfortunately, there's nowhere I can go around me that doesn't involve either going down or up a hill. So there's always hills involved. When I was building up my walking, I used to have to drive somewhere to then walk on the flats. But fortunately, you know, those days are long gone. And then I have been doing regular longer walks in preparation for this. So maybe once a week, I might do 15 to 20,000 steps in a day. Or I'll go on a 3-hour hike, or I'll go on a 2-hour hike. So little by little, we're using this principle of titration and we're taking the body and we're just building up the baseline. So the baseline isn't too far removed from what we actually want to do. Establishing one's baseline is something that's a whole different conversation. So if you're listening to this and you're like, well, I don't even know like really what my baseline is yet, this is not necessarily the podcast where that will get answered, but there are other podcasts on that which you're welcome to try. So I guess the first point when we're looking at taking on these extra physical challenges is making sure whatever you're taking on is appropriate for you. Nothing is going to be better for you than choosing an appropriate challenge. Even if the challenge is not necessarily what you want it to be, if it's appropriate and then you win and then you have success, that's going to create a positive reinforcing experience for the next one and the next thing that you can win and the next thing that you can have success with, which will signal to the nervous system, pushing my body is safe. Expanding is safe because your nervous system trusts you not to push it too far too soon. So that is probably the most important thing, is choose something appropriate. I think the furthest distance that I walked prior to this was about 16K. So it was this walk was a 5K on top of my longest distance. But the longest distance I probably walked recently is probably more about 12. So it was an extra 10K. It was about 28,000 steps in total, but I know some days just through activities of daily living, I can do 20,000 steps. So it's only an extra 8,000. Also, because all we had to do that day was, apart from the driving, be outside. What a wonderful gift to just be outside for the day. I didn't have to answer emails. I didn't have to sit with people who were going through or processing some of the most challenging traumas of their life. I didn't have to interpret test results. I didn't have to emotionally hold space for anyone. So for me, even though the day was very physically intense, some of the emotional and cognitive intensity that I normally have to have energy for each day, that was gone. That was not a concern on that day. So it just meant that there was more energy freed up for the event itself. And that kind of brings me into the next point, which is planning. Now, if you're going to do something big, if you're going to do something which is expansive, we want to plan appropriately around it. So just as I said, we need to pick something which is appropriate for our body. We also need to plan to do whatever it is when our overall life load isn't too great. And so that means that the life load can come from emotional things going on in your life, cognitive things going on in your life, how busy you are with work. If you've got sick children, if you've got sick parents, if you're having challenges in your relationship, if you're having challenges at work, you know, if there's a lot of other stresses going on, then maybe it isn't the appropriate time to push your body to its limits. In some cases, I found for me personally is actually the getting away, being outside in nature can actually really be supportive for some of those cognitive and emotional loads. But you need to know your body and you need to know, okay, does getting outside for the day actually make me feel better or does it make me feel worse? And I know that low intensity physical activity does usually make me feel better when I'm cognitively and emotionally overloaded. So I knew I could do that, but I know I can't do things that are physically very intense. So getting my heart rate up really high is not so great when I'm emotionally and cognitively overloaded. But walking, even if it is a long walk with a few hills, is generally okay. The other thing is where you are in your cycle. This may or may not be relevant to you, depending on if you are a man or a woman, if you have a cycle, if you don't have a cycle, and if you notice that your body responds differently at different times of your cycle. But I've always felt that I have more energy, more physical capacity from ovulation into, you know, the end, into the next cycle. And then I have the least energy, least capacity from menstruation up until ovulation, give or take. So if I'm going to do something which is more expansive, I plan to do that in the second half of my cycle. And that's just how it goes. Sometimes I can get away with it by the end of the first week of my cycle, provided it's not something too big. But for the most part, if I really am going to stretch myself, I'll do it in the most favorable part of my cycle because I know I have my estrogen, I have my progesterone. They're helping me modulate inflammation and they're helping me to recover. So the planning matters, planning to not have too much life load and then this thing becomes its own life load. And then also, if you are a woman, if it does feel relevant to you, to plan around times in your cycle. And then not only planning for what happens on the day, but also having some planned rest available. So we did this on a bank holiday weekend. We walked on the Sunday, which meant like we had Monday, or at least I had Monday, where I didn't have to go back to work. I had Monday where I could take a little bit more time to recover. But you might even want to take a few days to recover, not necessarily one day. In September, which might actually be quite close to when this podcast will actually get published, I'll be swimming, doing the Brown Sea Island swim. So that's a 6.5K swim circumnavigating Brown Sea Island. And it'll probably take between 2.5-3 hours, depending on currents and fatigue and whatnot. So that's going to be my next big challenge. And unfortunately, that's a set date. I can't plan my cycle around that, but I am already thinking I'll probably take at least a couple of days, maybe even 3 days off work after that to recover. Not because I can't work, but because I just really want to not have to work with low-level cognitive fatigue. I just want to give myself the space to feel really good before I come back to work. So we've talked about appropriateness. We've talked about planning. And then the next thing I want to talk about is fueling. This fueling is going to be super important, especially if this is an endurance type of event like it was for us, walking for 6 hours. You need fuel to walk for 6 hours. And yes, some people can do these things fasted, but when you have a history perhaps of chronic fatigue, we do want to make sure the body is well fed and well fueled, so the nervous system, so the adrenal glands don't have to work so hard to keep energy available. So in terms of the fueling hierarchy, I think what's really important is that food quality matters. It's really tempting when you think, oh, I've just walked for 6 hours. I'm going to treat myself and I'll have fish and chips at the end. We even on the hike, we bumped into like a couple. It was towards the end and they're like, oh, how far are you walking today? So we obviously looked like serious walkers. And we told them, oh, actually, we've just been down like the west side of the peninsula and now we're coming up the east side and we've been walking for about 5 hours or whatever we said. Can't remember, but and they're like, oh, well, you can definitely have a glass of wine tonight then. And both of us just thought, neither of us are having a glass of wine tonight. And so it comes back to this idea that, you know, sometimes when you do something big and exciting, you might want to treat yourself. But actually, this is where I find that dialing in the food quality works really, really well. You know, we started the day with a good breakfast. You know, I think we had sourdough toast and eggs and avocado and bacon and blueberries, like just a good amount of protein, healthy fibers, healthy fats, all of that. And then we went off for our walk. I think Henrietta had a banana as we were setting off, and I had made the day before a keto pizza. So the keto pizza is made with chicken mince, like a 500 gram chicken mince, and you mix it with the egg and a little bit of cheese, and then you flatten it out so that it creates the base. So you bake this sort of flat chicken mince in the oven. And then you put on, then you just treat it like a pizza. So then you put on your tomato and, you know, your toppings. I think we had olives and chorizo and red peppers and feta cheese and regular cheese. So that was a really, really high protein. I mean, 500 grams of chicken mince is, that's 100 grams of protein plus the egg, plus the cheeses, plus the chorizo. So it was probably about, I'd say, 120, 140 grams of protein in the whole thing between the two of us. So 60 to 70 grams each. So we had real high protein snacks. That was supposed to be our lunch, but I had a couple of pieces just before we set off because I just felt like I needed a little bit more of something in my stomach as we got started. Then we also brought with us banana muffins. So again, this is something I make at home. It's just bananas. And instead of using like a flour, it's ground flaxseed, whey protein powder, and then egg and mashed up banana, and then you just mix it all together and make these little muffins. So those are quite nice, you know, protein, carb, fat, fiber snacks that we could have. And then we did also go to a place I know locally that does a gluten-free chocolate avocado brownie. And I know I just said about eating good quality food and not treating yourself with rubbish food. These are very, very high quality. It's made with all sorts of good whole ingredients, and they're not very sweet, but they are very delicious. So we picked up two of those as well as our healthy treat for the walk. So we had some really good high protein snacks, but there was also adequate carbs, there was adequate fat, there was adequate fiber. Yeah, just some really, really good food. We had enough of it. And you know, halfway through our walk, we stopped, we had a little picnic, we ate most of this, saved a little bit for the end. And that worked really, really well. Additionally, hydration was really important. We obviously carried water. We both had electrolytes in our water. The ones that I really like are the Repower ones, which are high sodium. And then I had creatine in my water as well, which I've been taking for muscle recovery. So we had really, really good fuel. We had good hydration. We had our electrolytes. I had my creatine as well. At the end of the hike, Henrietta also had brought some whey protein, and she just mixed some whey protein with water and she drank that. And whether it's true or not, I don't know, but she told me that's why she could get back to her kettlebells on Wednesday when I was still having an extra recovery day. But we'll never know if it was the whey protein or not, but that's what she had as well. But then here, there might be other things that you're taking specifically for you as part of your recovery, whether that's oxaloacetate, which I did a podcast on fairly recently, maybe some things like branched chain amino acids or glutathione, you know, anything that you know that you already do, that you already take, that helps you recover, you want to have those in there as well. So then also worth mentioning is we had a really good evening meal. I had just done some bolognese sauce. So just, you know, mince, tomato, you know, very basic, fresh herbs, whatnot. And we had that with gluten-free pasta mixed with courgette. So this is something I do a lot at home, as I spiralize a courgette and then I mix that kind of 50-50 in terms of the volume, not necessarily the weight, with the pasta. So you are getting some carb, but it's not too carb heavy. And then you're getting the vegetables as well. You know, fueling really, really well on the day, the day before the day, and then a few days afterwards. I still ate very well, but I was very hungry for a few days afterwards. So I definitely ate more than normal, which was really helpful as well. So then the other things which are important for recovery are sleep. So sleep can be a little bit elusive. I think sometimes when people extend themselves physically, the body can become overstimulated and they don't sleep as well. So this is probably just something you'll have to do your best with. But I recently have started taking supplements for sleep support every night. And I've got two different ones that I take with some magnesium glycinate. So I've got one by Cytoplan, which is called Cytonite, which has got some glycine and some various other things in it. And then I've got another one by A. Vogel, which is called Sleep Well, which has got a lot of lemon balm in it and 5-HTP. So after the hike, I just whacked the two together. I just mixed everything together, took the two magnesium glycinate, and I slept really, really well. You can obviously, you might already have sleep supports that you use, or you might want to play around with things just to see what works for you. But supporting the nervous system to calm down, that's what the glycine is for, that's what the lemon balm is for, that's what the magnesium is for, could potentially be really helpful here as well for a good night's sleep. And then we also want to consider active recovery. So this was something that I really paid attention to when I was getting back into exercise. So when I was starting to do longer walks, and at this point in time, these longer walks were like an hour and a half, but that was long for me at the time. You know, the next day I would feel more tired, but not unwell. And I would find that yin yoga was really helpful, or restorative yoga was really helpful. I think actually when we got back that evening, we did some foam rolling. That was actually really helpful. cold water immersion, not for everyone. Some people don't tolerate it well. We went for a swim the next morning in the cold. So that was really helpful for recovery. Sauna, again, some people don't tolerate it well, but if you sauna is part of your routine, you know it helps you, you know you tolerate it well, you know it's supportive for recovery, that's something else that you could add in. And then even thinking of things like, you know, booking yourself a massage, doing some craniosacral therapy, getting some body work done, even the reflexology, Reiki. You know, if you're going to really challenge yourself to do something big, it might be really nice, you know, to treat yourself, you know, instead of doing the food treat, to treat yourself to just some sort of bodywork therapy, you know, the next day or whatnot to help you recover. And I hadn't really thought about it before, but maybe that's what I'll do after my Brown Sea Island swim, because I'll be a bit more organized, is maybe just book in a massage or some reflexology or something like that. So that is everything I think I wanted to cover. We talked about, you know, we need to pick something that's appropriate and we need to train appropriately to build up to that thing. We can't just expect the body to suddenly do something we haven't trained for. We need to train for it, just like a marathon runner would train for a marathon. Then we talked about planning. So, you know, thinking about your total life load, is now the time to be pushing yourself? And then if you need to, planning around your menstrual cycle. Then fueling. You know, if you still feel confused about nutrition day to day, it's going to be really hard for you to know how to fuel yourself for like some kind of bigger physical challenge. So the first thing is just to master your day-to-day nutrition. I think the episodes I have on blood sugar regulation are a great starting point for this. And then usually through training for some sort of specific event or challenge, you have the opportunity to practice trial and error and work out what works well for your body, like Henrietta insisting that she needed her whey protein shake once we finished. So, you know, the training is what gives you the opportunity also to play around with supplements, things that work well for you, the electrolytes, the creatine, or anything else. And sleep should ideally be something that we've mastered or has been mastered by this point in time. But we might need extra support around sleep after some big physical challenge. And then we have those active recovery components for the days after. So expecting that you will feel more tired for a few days after, having space in your life that allows for that, and then maybe inputting that active recovery, like I mentioned, the yin yoga, cold water, sauna, or maybe some body work. So I hope that has been helpful for you, you know, depending on where you are in your journey. Maybe it's just been helpful to give you some ideas, some inspiration, maybe understand what has been working well, what hasn't been working well. And hopefully you'll be planning a challenge to take on sometime soon. So it has been wonderful talking with you today, and I'll see you in the next episode.